Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yeah, I'm in New York City. Well, it didn't rain today. There was a sort of gloomy a bit, but the sun was out, and it's 8 p.m. On my time. And it's a fairly warm day. And, back in California again. I'm not there, but we're going back in California. And this time we're going to be talking about Charles M. Schulz Museum. Peanuts, for those who wonder what that name refers to, and I don't mean the nuts, but the comic strip, which could be nuts. And that's in Santa Rosa. Then we have the B. Bryant Preserve in Point Arena. Talk about animals. And then I have a stayed at Melita Station Inn in Santa Rosa and took a journey over to the Point Arena Lighthouse in, you guessed it, Point Arena. So before we have our first guest, you know, it's time for... What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. Yes, and you can get these wonderful brownies on www.brownies.com. So, yes, hello, Esther, and go ahead, and Eunice, of course. Okay, they're both with me. Well, they have to travel along with me. You know how it is. But now we're about to go to the Charles Schulz Museum. Hello. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Oh, just great. Introduce yourself to my audience.
Okay. I'm Gina Hunsinger, and I'm the marketing director here at the Charles Schulz Museum.
Okay. And
I'm here to talk to you about the museum, whatever you want to know.
Well, the first thing I want to get into, before we get into, like, the air of what the whole place looks like. What is it basically all about?
Okay. Well, Charles Schulz lived the last 30 years of his life on the area that the museum was built. And so he actually built an ice arena in 1969 here in Santa Rosa, and he built his studio near it within walking distance. And so he spent much of his time going to the ice arena, hanging out, watching people, and then he would go back and draw his Peanuts comic strip. So when they decided to make a museum, they decided to have it in the place where he actually spent a large majority of his time. So that's why it is in Santa Rosa, California, and that's why the museum is housed here. Because if he could be housed anywhere in the world, because he was famous throughout the world, it could be in New York, because that's such a hot place for people to be. But they decided it was more true to who he was to be here in Santa Rosa.
Okay, so we have, there's more than just one building, as I saw. So let's first get into the main building, the museum itself, which I believe it had three floors? two floors. How many floors?
It has two floors, and it's 27,000 square feet. And we have three different exhibition areas that we change all the time. And we have a recreation of his studio. We actually have the desk that he drew on for the last 50 years, well, for the whole time that he drew the strip, for those 50 years that he was drawing, one of his chairs that he used. And then we have a timeline of his life, a nursery wall that he had for his daughter. We have a theater that you can go in and watch animated specials and interviews that Charles Schulz did throughout his life. We have outdoor gardens. We have a Snoopy labyrinth that you can walk
in. Well, I want to just continue first with the building itself, inside the building.
Okay. Sure.
So
sure.
Up on that second floor is the studio.
Right.
And a recreation of the studio, plus I guess there were other things there, right?
We have little areas that talk about different parts of his life. His life before he became famous in the cartoon strip. His time in World War II, because he fought in World War II. His sports. He was a sports enthusiast, and his family. What his parents looked like, his dog, Spike, all those things. Those are little cases that we have upstairs. And then a nursery wall he did
right.
for his daughter, Meredith, which we can talk about later. And then we have a small exhibition that we change every 3 months on the top floor.
Okay. Then also, I thought I remembered they were showing you, cartoons from before or around that period? Were they before?
Yes, his early influences. What influenced him? What was Crazy Cat and Prince Valiant, those types of cartoonists, what they drew, what they looked like when he started drawing his strip in 1950.
Okay. Then I also believe, outside there was another room, I guess you can
yes.
play and create comics or cartoons if you want.
That's right. We have a place for people to go and actually do it themselves. If you were inspired, you can come and take a pencil and draw in a strip, or you can practice drawing one of the characters. There's information on how to do that, or you can even use a zoetrope, which is the first animated, which animates things as you spin it. It was the first sort of animation. It's all hands-on. It's not computer-generated, because Charles Schulz did everything with his pencil and a piece of paper, so we've decided to continue that theme where it's pen to paper, which is fun for people to just try. We actually have classes in there for kids, too, and adults, depending on what time it is, to in all kinds of art, but a lot of cartooning classes go on in that room.
Now, actually, when you first enter the museum itself, there's that famous little stand over there, huh?
Are you talking about Lucy's psychiatric booth?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. People will
probably remember that from many of the cartoons.
That's right. That's a very fun thing for people to do. They can come and take a picture as Lucy, if they want, in the psychiatric booth. You can ask your friends for 5 cents or whatever. We have that up, and sometimes we don't always have that booth out there because it rolls. But if you do find it, it's usually out in front on nice sunny days, like it is today here in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then it's that same area. Well, I guess before you actually go into the main part of the museum, of where you can see their movies, cartoons that you could see.
Right, our lobby. Right. Sometimes the psychiatric booth is in the lobby. Sometimes we actually put it out in the front of the doors of the museum, depending on what's happening that day, how many people are in the museum. But it is as you come into the lobby, you're greeted with the four most popular characters in the strip, which are Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Lucy, and Linus. We have actually a statue of Lucy as Marilyn Monroe, which is cute. It was just a statue that was made during a big festival that we had for three summers in a row, and that was one of the statues that we acquired from that artist. Made up different looks for Lucy, and it's a fun statue that's there. Did you see that when you were in?
No, I think I might have missed it. But then again, I had two other people with me, and they probably saw it.
That's right. Well, she's dressed up as, she has like a wig on, and she's in high heels, and she has diamonds on her neck like Marilyn Monroe did, and it says Schroeder and Diamonds are a girl's best friend, because of course Lucy has such a crush on Schroeder in the comic strip that it's
right.
A fun play off of the whole story. So
now with the, and I guess it's a, I because of time wise, I wasn't able to see. I see. Were the movies in the lobby? Like you could go in and watch a movie, or
right.
What is it now? What were they, cartoons that you would watch?
Yes, it's our theater. It seats 100 people, and it's a big screen, just like you would see in a movie theater, real comfortable seats. And we play different things all the time. Every month we have a new schedule of movies. There's sometimes animated specials. If you come in Christmas, you'll see the Christmas special that everybody likes to see on TV. We have all the different animated specials. We actually pick and choose because there's about 70 of them. We also have interviews that Charles Schulz gave during his lifetime, and there's an A&E special. We have one with Charlie Rose. So there's several of those that you can learn more about him as a person, or you can just enjoy the animated strips in a theater setting.
Right. Okay, so now you've entered, you've paid your money, and you come in, and there's this, I guess, what do you call it, the main hall, the gallery hall, or I don't know what you call it. The one you're allowed to take photos.
The only place you can take photos. It is the Great Hall, and it's where our permanent exhibitions are. We have quite a few pieces in there. It's a large open room, and actually, I wonder if you probably didn't have enough time to notice this, but the architecture of the building, if you look, when it's sunny above, there actually will be skylight lights coming down onto the ground from maybe two stories, three stories up. It's quite a large room, and it actually will make a circle. And if you look at the ceiling, there's a grid pattern, which actually architecturally depicts a cartoon strip, and the tiles on the floor are all squares too, like a cartoon strip. So the architect who actually created this building really looked at who Charles Schulz was and how to put this building together. And so it's fun to come in and just see those small little details. But the bigger details, we always have a different mural up. The one we have up now is Snoopy standing there with a fire hat on, and he has all his friends standing around him trying to save a leaf that's falling from a tree. And that changes depending on what exhibitions we have. And that's a fun place for people to take photographs. And then,
well, I noticed that on that one wall from far, you basically just see Charlie Brown and
Lucy.
Yes, Lucy, is that what you see in the distance?
Yes.
Like if you,
yes.
And then, but if you go up to it real close,
yes,
it's all made of little comic strips.
Right. There's 3,588 little tile comic strips that were pieced together so that the dark parts of it actually brought together make the figure of Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football, a big theme in the Peanuts comic strip. So it's really amazing to see from far away. It just looks like, you know, Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football. But if you get close up, you realize the dark parts of the comic strips themselves are actually what's making that art on the wall.
Now, how long did it take somebody to do that, by the way?
Well, you know, I never asked that question, but I do know that the artist who is Yoshi Antani, he's a Japanese artist, he made a few of them, actually, and he did it. He didn't do it computerized. He did it by hand. He cut out strips,
wow,
and he did them on the floor of a gymnasium in Japan. He figured it out by hand. So he's a very talented artist, and we just enjoy so much that particular piece in the museum. And one of the things I tell people, it's such a huge piece. I mean, it must go up. It seems like it goes up three stories, but it's really two, and it goes, it's probably 20 feet long, and that's about 10 years worth of cartoon strips. And so I tell people that's only one-fifth of what Charles Schulz did in his career, which is amazing because it's a huge wall filled with cartoon strips.
Do you know what was the, the background or whatever for the infamous pulling the football away, or where that began?
I think Charles Schulz thought that losing was funnier than winning, and I don't know where he came up with in his creative nature that particular theme, but boy, Charlie Brown never did get to kick the football. And he tried many times, and Lucy never let him do it. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you then also, above there, I was going to ask you about the Snoopy's house.
Oh, yes. Okay,
Snoopy's
upstairs.
Doghouse. If you look up, you could see Snoopy's doghouse, too, is there.
Yes. Yes, that is... in Central Park in New York, there were the orange flags that hang down a couple years ago. Christo,
yeah.
Jean Claude, he's Christo and Jean Claude, his wife, were the artists that hung all of those orange sheets in Central Park. Well, he was the same artist in the 70s who came to California, and he put these canvases. Well, he wanted to put these canvases on the farmland here, all the way from, I don't know how many miles he did it, all the way into the sea. And of course, people thought he was crazy. What is this about? You know. And Charles Schulz, as another artist, connected with Christo, and he actually helped him out and gave him support to do this big piece of art throughout the coastline here in Sonoma County in California. And so Charles Schulz made a joke between artists, but he put it in his comic strip where Snoopy is asking, what is this artist? What is Christo going to do next? And he comes up in the panel and his doghouse is wrapped, because Christo makes these huge art pieces. You know, they're always something large, a building wrapped,
right,
or, you know, flags in Central Park. So the joke is that, you know, he wrapped Snoopy's doghouse. Well, after Charles Schulz died, now that cartoon strip was done in the 70s, and they continued to have a relationship throughout, Charles Schulz's life. And so when Charles Schulz died, Christo actually presented that to the museum as a piece, and we decided to put it as a permanent exhibition because he actually did wrap the doghouse in response to the cartoon strip, which was 30 years, previous to him wrapping it. But
right,
we actually have that piece there, which is very fun, and it's a permanent piece. So anytime people come here, they can see Snoopy's wrapped doghouse.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Then, and also now what I want to do is go into, I guess, and I'll call it the main room, because that's the room you're going to spend the most time in, because if you choose to, you can see a whole bunch of comic strips.
Yeah. That is our main strip gallery. And it's the reason, it's the heart. Charles Schulz's wife, Jean Schulz, was a huge part of making this museum possible. And she always says this is the heart and soul of the museum, is really to see Charles Schulz's original comic strips. And at any given time, we have 60 to 70 original strips in the museum. And in the newspaper, they're so tiny, but it's so wonderful, and I think that's why this museum was brought about, was, you know, these would be in somebody's room, right? Nobody would see them, but to have them on display, people can actually see his line, the art that he did to create them, and they're much, much bigger than what you see in the newspaper. It's a totally different feeling. I don't know how you felt about seeing them in person.
It was much easier.
It's much easier to read.
Yeah.
Because it's much, much bigger. The print is much bigger. But we do them on different themes. We actually own, Charles Schulz did 17,897 strips in his lifetime, which
wow.
makes most cartoonists, you know, gasp, because it's quite a big achievement. And so he gave them to people. He's a very generous man. And he gave those comic strips to many, many people who asked for them over the 50 years that he was doing this. And so as the museum and Mrs. Schulz, we've been able to collect around 7,000 of those 17,000 here, and we have them in our collection here. And so we rotate them all the time, and we put them around different themes. Right now, the theme is philosophies, Peanuts philosophies. So it's really fun to see the different philosophies that some of the cartoon characters had. Sally's had several philosophies. One of them was who cares, and he had lots of fun with the philosophies that his characters had. And I think partly because he was in some way he thought about the world in some of these ways in the philosophical way, even though he was making us laugh.
Right.
So it's fun to see, like Snoopy, you know, dancing is an art form, or there's just so many ways to make somebody laugh about, you know, the particular philosophies that the characters had. So
are these permanent, or do they change? In other words, like the themes change and then you substitute
right.
different cartoons, or
we do. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we change them all the time. We have about 7,000 strips in the museum's collection, so we are always every 3 months we change them into something different. The next particular strip rotation we're going to have is Hit the Road Snoopy. And we also have, actually, the next one is Games Children Play, which is sort of the mud pie, mud cake, cowboy type thing. And Charles Schulz actually came up with a game called Ha Ha Herman, and he's making, you know, talking about what games children played. So that's a fun one. It also sort of looks back into the 50s, right, in the 60s when he was doing his strip. The next one after that is Hit the Road Snoopy, where we have a lot of about the adventures that Snoopy takes in his adventures in the strip. So it'll be a lot of Snoopy.
And I understand, like, they use an area that has, like, in case you're confused on who's related to who. On the families.
You know,
the families, yeah.
We should have that. We do right now in our downstairs gallery. So you actually walk from the our great hall where we were talking about that great tile mural of Lucy and Charlie Brown, and you walk through our downstairs gallery, and then you walk into the original strip gallery. So in the downstairs gallery, we have a Siblings in Peanuts exhibition that's happening. So we talk about the relationship between Lucy and her brother Linus and her other brother Rerun, and Charlie Brown and Sally were siblings too. So we talk about the many fights that Lucy had with her brothers, and sometimes how Sally would try to take over Charlie Brown's room, you know, and try to move into it. Just having the normal squabbles that children have in families, and Charles Schulz definitely depicted that in the strip. But we don't have any place that's sort of like a key to the comic strip, which is a great idea, actually, you know, that who's related to who.
Right,
they all
and
live
if
in the
they
same
are.
Area. Right, and if they are. Right, I think that's a great idea, and I will definitely say something
to the
curator
about that. I remember the guy that always got dirty all the time.
Pigpen. Well, we do have one place where you can look at the most popular characters in the strip, and that's
mm-hmm.
in our Great Hall. There was actually 64 characters that Charles Schulz
really?
Introduced. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Introduced in the strip, but only the ones that have the strongest personalities, or the ones where
yeah.
he could really find something funny to talk about,
yeah.
were the
mm-hmm.
ones that stayed. That's, you know, the ones that stayed are the ones that had something that they could say that was funny. So Pigpen is sort of funny, you know. And there were ones that were X'd out of the strip almost immediately. There was a girl, her name was Charlotte Braun, and she was supposed to be sort of a reflection of Charlie Brown, but a girl. reflection, right. And she screamed all the time. Like, her whole thing was she was just super loud. And actually, people, you know, begged him to take her out of the strip because they found her so annoying. So he actually did. He actually did. We had a picture. He actually wrote to a woman. He had an axe going through Charlotte's head. He said, well, I guess she's done. You know, so he didn't ever put her back in the strip.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned, like, the garden, and I guess you have, because there are, well, I don't know what they're made of. They're the,
is it,
yes.
Is it the labyrinth?
Things that you
is that what you're
sit on or pose with.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes. There's definitely different photo opportunities in the gardens and stuff. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I know that there's, well, for instance, there's one place where you could sit. I guess it's like a bench, and it's,
yes.
You can call up a friend and say, I'm
yes.
here, and turn on
yes.
your, and you'll be on
the
web.
Webcam. Yes, the webcam. There is one at the ice arena. So once you leave the museum and you go directly east, you find the ice arena that Charles Schulz built and the Warm Puppy Cafe, where he ate in morning and breakfast and lunch almost every weekday. There is a bench out in front, and you can, when you're here visiting, you can call your friend and you can sit there, and you're on the web. So anybody who sits there or goes by there is continuously streaming on Snoopy's Home Ice website. And it's a fun little nod to people if you're traveling and you want to just have a little fun with somebody you miss back home.
Yeah, I saw one with the bird. I can't think of the bird's name.
Woodstock.
That's right
Woodstock.
Next to the
Woodstock,
yes.
Yes.
Of course, you know who posed with them. Good old Esther and Eunice, of course.
Oh fabulous. Oh, I'm so glad they got to. Oh, I'm glad.
Well, when I get to doing this, you're going to see one that's really, really funny. But I ain't going to. I'm going to surprise you on that one.
Oh,
but
good.
I know,
well, I'm looking forward to it.
But I didn't get a chance to go out into the garden. Are there other, like, I don't know, what do you want to call them, statues or things like that
yes.
in the
yes.
garden?
Yes, there's statues in the garden. We have a few, we have water art, actually. The water fountain has got some holographic, it reflects light in a really nice way. There's actually a path that looks like Charlie Brown's zigzag. Sure, we have holograms, or holographs, I guess they're called, underneath Lucy's big baseball hat. So images of the characters actually stand up out of a bird bath that's in the back garden area there. Plus, we have probably three statues, ones of Linus, ones of Charlie Brown, and we have the kite-eating tree that has a kite in it. Charlie Brown was always in trouble with the kite-eating tree because it was always taking his kites. So we have that people can look at. And it's fun at night. It lights up. So many times we'll have parties and such back out in the back patio.
Now, what is the, just to get the basics, what is the admission charge and what does it include?
Okay. Well, admission to the museum is $10 for adults and $5 for students, kids, and seniors. Kids under 3 are free. And if you want a guided tour, in the summertime, we have a docent-led tour every day here at 11:30. But if you want a group tour or that type of thing, if you want a docent-led tour and you have a group of 8 or more, you can just go ahead and give us a call and we'll set something up for you.
That's great. And you got a website?
Our website is www.schultzmuseum.org. We have a Facebook page. We put a strip up every day and sometimes history about it. And we're open every day except Tuesdays in the winter from 11 to 5 p.m.
That's really great. Did I miss anything about the place?
I think you're good. I just think you need to know we have a gift shop in the museum, and there's a bigger
gift shop. Oh, yeah. I wanted to mention, that's right, in terms of the gift shop, it's not only a gift shop. If you go upstairs, make your way upstairs, is a gallery, correct?
Yes.
In the gift shop?
Yes,
and
there is.
Since I didn't make my way, what is up there?
Well, there is Peanuts through the decades. So we have Peanuts, like 3D objects through the decades, showing the progress. And there's a Lego piece that Charles Schultz's grandson did of the ice arena. And there's also lithographs you can purchase up above that you can get in the gift shop that are numbered lithographs that are still available. But there are ones that were done at the time that Charles Schultz was alive. And they sort of changed those cases upstairs a lot. It used to be the museum. Up above used to actually be sort of a museum of sorts until they made this large museum. So it continues to sort of tell a similar story, but the museum just has much more, you know, information. So it's just fun because we'll change things out over there depending on what's happening.
Great, that's fabulous. Yeah, and it's really a cool place to go. When you're in Santa Rosa, it's like that's, you know, you should see it. Go there. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
Don't miss that one.
It'll make you laugh. It'll make you laugh, that's for sure.
Yeah, it'll tickle you, especially depending on your age, of course, how long you've, you know, seen that. The comic strip, but it's funny because the old comic strips that were up there, and I guess I kind of like, I don't know how long they were out until, but I was like a kid and I remember seeing that. I never read those in particular.
Oh, like
but
Prince
like,
Valiant,
know.
Like Prince Valiant or Crazy Cat, those influences of Charles Schultz. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Prince Valiant being out, and it was like, oh, this is not a funny one. I don't feel like reading it. But I remember that. I went, Prince Valiant. Oh, I remember, like, kind of seeing that. Cause and it's not like as much as, like, you went into the store and bought the you know, if you're buying it in the comics kind of thing versus,
right.
like, you know, you're reading the newspaper and there's
just
certain things
newspaper.
In there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it's like
newspaper comics.
Yeah, it's like my father, I mean, he always read Beetle Bailey. That was his thing, you know? And I went, okay, it's nice, I guess because he was in the Army, so he attached it with Beetle Bailey. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people, you know, they do attach, and people are attached to the Peanuts characters and different ones, you know? I mean, they, you know, some people see Charlie Brown, some people like Peppermint Patty. It's so interesting to see when, especially the generation that grew up with Peanuts, because there's 50 years of us, right? So we're all from 50 years of kids seeing the strip. But you know what? Little kids like it too. They love it when they're introduced to it. The animation, it's there's something fun about it, and they do like the characters. So we find that many families, from the grandparents all the way down to the kids, will enjoy it as a good family outing because everybody can connect to it in some way.
Yeah, that's really great. Well, I thank you, like, so much, like, for calling in and telling us about this. We gave the website, and I think we got it all, huh?
Yeah, it was a pleasure. So come back again. We would love to see your two chicken friends, and I'm looking forward to those pictures.
Yes, you'll see. It's really good. I had some good ones.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Take care.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Bye. Oh, yeah,
bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. So that's definitely a place to go to. In the order, I guess I don't, I didn't write down the correct order. So what we're going to do, well, let me see. You know how I need a music break. Let me pick one here that I have, and then we're going to go to Point Arena and go to the lighthouse there after, well, you know, I haven't played this in a while and I like it.
We starve, look at one another, short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, where
let the sunshine in, but I will later tell you about something that wasn't sunshine. But first, yes, that was, well, I'll get to that in a minute. What I want to do is, I did some interviews while I was out there, one of which I went to the Point Arena Lighthouse, and I spoke with Dan Kalinowski, I guess. Kalinowski, that's how I have it on here. And he'll tell you about the lighthouse.
Hi. Well, first of all, introduce yourself to my audience here.
Hello there. I'm Dan Kalinowski, and I work here at the Point Arena Light Station as a docent. I'm a volunteer, and I'm here to answer questions and help educate you what you'd like to know.
Well, since I haven't even looked around yet, you can tell me what I'm going to be seeing.
First of all, you'll be in our museum, which was renovated a few years ago, the centerpiece of which is our First Order Fresnel lens, which is the largest lens produced for lighthouses pretty much in the Western Hemisphere, in the Western world. And we're very proud of it because it is made of rather soft glass, and being over 100 years old, many times are not in the greatest of condition. Ours is in almost pristine condition. If you look carefully, there are a few nicks and bumps, but not many. And we're very proud to have it on display here today.
Like almost like a diamond, huh? With
almost.
Yeah.
And we point out that our museum is in our Falk Signal Building, and this building dates from 1896. It's the oldest building on the property, and has, as you can see, has a number of historical photographs, maps, and a lot of memorabilia from that vintage.
And what will I? How long has this the lighthouse been here? This is since 1908. Is that what it's?
1908 is the birthday of our opening for the lighthouse that is here now.
Mm-hmm.
However, the first lighthouse was constructed in 1869, opened in 1870, in this very spot. It was built of brick and mortar. And it did just fine and dandy until the great earthquake of 1906. And that earthquake, which also was devastating to San Francisco, as you are well aware, also affected us here because we're close to the San Andreas Fault.
So in this, in the museum, will I be seeing like something first about the old lighthouse?
The old lighthouse is cataloged by a variety of stations here. Each station has a little bit of history and photographs to go with it. And yes, the original lighthouse of 1870 is cataloged here with the way it looked and the way it looked after the earthquake, which was ultimately torn down.
Okay. So in terms of the rest of the museum here, I see there's a lot of. Is this like the history since it's been around?
This is the history not only of the lighthouse, but also of the area, the immediate area of Point Arena itself. In our whale watch room here, which looks out to the ocean, it's a catalog of Point Arena, the town, as well as the Indians and their artifacts. We have a display there as well, which the children always find interesting. Arrowheads and such.
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular thing about this lighthouse? Is it tallest or anything? Or
The lighthouse that we have is 115 feet high. It is among the tallest lighthouses in the state of California, and we are very proud that we have it in condition that the public is able to go in and actually climb to the top.
Yeah, there's no elevator then, huh?
I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about?
Don't be scared off by the weather. Our weather here, we have air conditioning pretty much 365 days a year outside, so please come dressed warmly. But we have usually some very great weather here with exceptional vistas of the Rocky Coast.
Great. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Well, afterwards, I'm sorry, I didn't go. Oh, thank God. Nancy went up into the lighthouse. It was just too much for me to climb. So she went up in the lighthouse, and that's where she met Tim Johnson, another person who works there. And when I saw him, I interviewed him.
Hi, introduce yourself to my audience.
Hi, I'm Tim Johnson, and I'm here at the Point Arena Light Station today.
Okay, now that we already had Dan on here, I understand you have some other interesting things to tell us.
Yes, I do. The Point Arena Light Station here, it has been the set of many films over the years. Okay, most recently, we did film the Hollywood blockbuster feature film in 1993 that was Forever Young, which was shot right here on location.
And I understand there's something here left over from it?
Yes, there is. In fact, when you go out to the grounds where the lighthouse is, there is a gazebo, which to this day is still used as a spot for family retreats, for picnics, for weddings, and Hollywood still comes up here. Most recently, it was used as a central focus for a Chrysler commercial for the minivans that was shot here by BBD&O out of Detroit. They came out here, and in fact, my entire family was cast in the commercial along with the principal actors brought up from Los Angeles.
That's great. You also, I overheard something about the landing strip for the movie?
Yes. In fact, when they were shooting the film, one of the producers had Pentagon connections, and the focus of the story in the film was around there was a serviceman who was from World War II, and he essentially returns to Point Arena to find his long lost sweetheart, and he essentially hijacks a vintage B-25 World War II plane, and the producers had to somehow recreate a landing strip here on location. What they ended up doing was, through their Pentagon connections, was getting portable runways brought in from Saudi Arabia. They transported them here, put them out on these dairy pasture lands adjacent to the lighthouse property, and voila, that is where the B-25s took off and where they landed.
Dan, I'm also hearing some rumor about some other lighthouse that claims an amount of feet, and what's the story about that?
Oy, what can I say? You know, I can tell you this. The bragging rights for the tallest lighthouse on the west coast of the United States. I will let your audience, they sound like a very sophisticated group of listeners, they can make that determination. However, we are 115 feet tall from our base to the tip of the lighthouse. The lighthouse, known as the St. George Reef Lighthouse in Crescent City, California, is not open to the public. It sits on an island 6 miles offshore, so it's very difficult to get public verification. However, despite their claims at being 140 feet tall, I can tell you this. They are 70 feet above the ground and 70 feet below the ground. And when I say that we are 115 feet tall, we are not including our basement.
Look at that. You just never know. I feel like we're on Me Witness News right at this point. Wow, that's really cool. Well, is there anything else that... this place, by the way, the lighthouse, looks like it's like freshly painted.
Thank you for asking. In fact, this was a labor of love. I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but the government of the United States, nor the state governments, no longer operate or control lighthouses. In fact, after the lighthouses were automated in the late 1970s, first with the fog signals and later with the beacons, the U.S. Coast Guard demanned the stations in 1979, and 3 years later, circa 1982, during the Reagan years, all lighthouses were decommissioned. Overnight, 750 lighthouses were orphaned. This became the first nonprofit lighthouse in the U.S., and as such, It was a labor of love to raise $385,000 to repaint our tower. In addition to that, we also had to remove the lens recently, the old lens, and put it in our museum. That required another $1.7 million. We are eternally grateful for the public for coming out and supporting our endeavors as a nonprofit.
Wow, this is really great. Well, we just... Well, the smokestack? What? It looks... I just got something whispered in my ear, my tech person. What did you say?
I think what she's trying to tell you here is the unique architectural shape of the lighthouses. Lighthouses traditionally provided three aids to navigation. They had a unique flash, which was their signature. They also had a unique fog signal, which everyone was different, so that a skipper on a ship would know where he was. And the third aid to navigation was the silhouette or the architectural profile in the distance, known as the daymark. Our daymark is very unique here in that following an earthquake where an earlier lighthouse had been removed, the new one was built, and people tell me that it resembles a smokestack on an old factory. Well, that is not a coincidence. The contractor on the rebuilding of the Point Arena Light Station in 1907 was none other than the San Francisco Chimney Company. They used steel-reinforced concrete, and this became the first modern lighthouse in the United States.
Wow, that's really cool. And by the way, it wasn't my tech person that told me. It was Esther and Eunice, my rubber chicken. Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Tim, for delivering this information to us. I appreciate it.
It is my delight, and to all your listeners, you are welcome to come out and visit us here at the Point Arena Light Station in beautiful Point Arena, California, along the scenic Mendocino Coast whenever you feel obliged. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, just so you can get the idea, the Point Arena station is not far from the B. Bryan Preserve, which I'm going to have coming on a little later on in the show. A hop, skip, and a jump. And even on the way, we had to stop. Well, we had to stop, right. We had to stop on the way between, at different points because the very, very winding roads along that route, extremely. And, you know, I did not regurgitate. I just had to get out of the car and walk around a bit and get some fresh air. But while we did, we were able to see the ocean, and in a few spots, we were able to see the seals, and we were kind of wondering, you know, people were deciding, are they seals or are they sea lions? And the thing that you, by looking through binoculars, actually the first thing you could tell, you should be able to look at, is whiskers. Seals don't have whiskers. And I think the seals have little ears, too. I'm not sure. But I kind of spotted that they were seals. So that was it. The ride itself wasn't great. If you could deal with all those winding turns, and that's okay. But anyway, so now while we're in Santa Rosa, that's where we went to Safari West. We had stayed at the Melita Station Inn, and so let's get to that one right now.
Well, hi. Introduce yourself to my audience.
All right, Tim Thresh.
And I'm Jackie Thresh, and we've been married nearly 40 years, and we run the inn.
I detect an accent. Where are you guys from? This is not California accent.
Some years back we were from England, and then we went to live in the Netherlands, and then in the year 2000 we came to live here.
And why did you, I'm just curious, why did you choose this particular area of California?
Well, I was working for Hewlett Packard, a big U.S. computer company, for 24 years in total. After 23 of those, they asked me to come here and work in Santa Rosa.
Oh, cool. And so I guess at what point did you decide You were going to have a bed and breakfast then.
At the point that my husband's job ended with the company's cutbacks, I refused to go further with him and said, we're going to do what I've always wanted to do, which is run a bed and breakfast inn. And here we are.
Okay.
And we decided that wine country in Sonoma County was a great place to do it.
So what was this bed and breakfast when you bought this? This facility, the house, the...
It was. It had been running as a bed and breakfast. Well, historically, it's always run as a bed and breakfast. And then over the last 12 years, it's been looked after by a couple of people. And then we took it over. So we're the third bed and breakfasters, if that's the right word for it, for running the...
Oh, that's great. Now, did you make a lot of changes when you took it over?
It was virtually unfurnished. Although we understood we were buying it furnished, it had a few rackety beds and a few obsolete pieces of furniture. So we put in our European antique Victorian furniture, and we supplemented that by going round to antique shops, which was great fun.
We've changed it since. We've done the work that you viewed down at the in the basement level or the yard
level. Tell us about the, that's an interesting...
That was a major project, but we took our time to figure that out, and we actually did that in 2007. That was completed and put into action just in time for the last boom in the travel economy.
So that gives us a room that is disabled access, and a hot tub for general use of the guests, and at the same time we put in a solar system which gives us renewable source of energy.
Gives us close to independence from PG&E in terms of electrical power. We took out our old gas furnace and we put in a heat pump system that heats and cools us. So we have air conditioning in summer, we have heating in winter.
Well,
and it's all benefits of the panels on the roof.
So this is something that you picked up from your work then, huh?
I guess the technical side of it, yes, but we were interested in making the business operate.
Well, kind of describe the room that's downstairs so we can get a visualization of it.
The access is from the straight from the car park through a gravel pathway in the garden and comes in their own French doors. They have a Californian king-sized bed, a small sitting area and dining area, and a kitchenette where they can reheat, take away dishes, or can bring in food of their own choice. I go down and serve breakfast to those who are truly disabled, who would prefer to stay in their room to eat their breakfast.
So, in other words, like as opposed to like an upstairs on the main level, like if you have some leftovers and stuff like that, there's a room. I see this. You have your little room like that has a refrigerator and.
So for the other guests in the area, they have got a refrigerator where they can store food or snacks. There's tea making, coffee making facilities. And every evening I put out cake or cookies.
And we provide complimentary waters and sodas in that fridge, so that's always kept stocked with waters and sodas.
Are you doing high tea?
No, that's a different licensing law here in California.
Oh, okay.
But we do provide afternoon tea, English afternoon tea, with scones for those that request it.
Homemade strawberry jam and coffee cream is part of the English afternoon tea, so it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, that's great. And are you making the cream?
No, the cream I have to, under California hygiene regulations, I have to buy that in from a local store that imports Devonshire clotted cream.
Oh, okay. but you are making your own.
My own preserves are all my own. Strawberry jam, maybe currant jam, marmalades are all homemade.
You had the chance to taste the marmalades at breakfast time.
Yeah, the Meyer lemon.
The Meyer lemon marmalade,
yeah.
Made from our own lemon tree. And Jackie makes her, freshly bakes her own scones. Or scones.
So now tell us about the, before we get into the rooms, I see you've got these little trains. There's a train running around over there. Then what's that all about with the train?
This stop of Melita was a stop on the railroad.
Yeah,
on
Southern Pacific built a connection through to Santa Rosa.
And the old railway line is now Channel Drive, which is just across the road from here. And this was the timetabling stop that was named Melita. And I have to tell you that the spelling of our inn is the correct spelling of the inn. It has the correct spelling because we looked at the old documents of the railroad, and they too spelled it with a double T, whereas the city at some stage got their spelling wrong, I think, and called it Melita with one T for the road.
You can go to the Sacramento Railroad Museum and look up the old timetable for the railroad.
This is what we did.
So you've named the rooms after the stations, is that what you...
The stops on the railroad.
The stops the townships down the valley, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
so tell us, like, how the rooms themselves furnished, how many rooms do you have here, by the way?
We have 6 rooms in total. The room downstairs with the Californian king size suite is the exception to the rule on, because that was a new room that we could construct to accommodate a Californian king size bed. Whereas the rooms on this floor have all got queen-size beds, they've all got their own private bathrooms, and some of those bathrooms have a Victorian clawfoot bath with a shower over, some have shower stalls for easy access for those less able. And our linens were brought over from England, so we have English bed linens.
Was anything else that you have here, like English?
Well, our Victorian furniture all came over from Europe, both England and Germany and the Netherlands.
The furniture in this room is essentially European.
By the way, in your own quarters, do you have the England
antique
furniture,
yeah,
and you made sure you have stuff from England,
yeah,
to remind you of home?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, that reminder. On the walls are pictures that people have given us and documents that people have given us connected to the history of this inn, and the lady who was born here and whose family lived and worked here. So, and it's good that we get visitors who come here because they knew about here as a child. One gentleman who broke his arm here as a young boy when his parents lived here. So now a gentleman from New York.
And another lady from Sweden came because her grandfather, as a Swede, came and worked the quarries here. But later he must have changed his mind and he went back to Sweden and he married the lady's grandmother, and she is still there in Sweden. But she was visiting some friends here and they came to look at where he must have been working.
And the reason for Melita being a stop on the railroad was because they had quarry here, which is now Spring Lake. And the quarry stone built the streets of San Francisco.
Oh.
So we had a lot of quarry workers used here as a boarding house, and that's probably the original use of this inn as a boarding house for those people.
And as I mentioned earlier, the railroad came through the valley here in 1887, was when they finally made the connection to Santa Rosa, wasn't the first railroad into Santa Rosa. It was just the politicking of the Southern Pacific gaining access or gaining control over the railroad companies who were trying to build up this valley meant that it was 1887 before they completed this particular line. And so we know that it was very active here at that time. The accounts of the day say that one railroad flat car a day of basalt blocks was leaving Melita Station, which was right across the creek here, going down to Vallejo and on a barge and across to San Francisco.
Wow. A lot of history, huh?
Yeah.
Now, breakfast. Tell us about the typical things that you make for breakfast. It's not just your casual ham and eggs.
We try and give a special meal for breakfast, and it's included those who are staying overnight. And we do a fresh fruit starter of some form. This morning it was strawberry parfait, caramel oranges, pineapple, Caribbean pineapple, which is a pineapple, fresh pineapple dish in coconut milk, are some of the starters we do, followed by a main course, a hot, cooked, sometimes sweet, sometimes savory. If it's sweet, we do things like Swedish egg cake, French, different forms of French toast. If it's savory, we might do cittatas or quiches. Very occasionally do smoked salmon dishes, so that we give guests a really good experience, and we follow that by a local bakery's bread and homemade cake, which the British call loaves. So they too are use the same names as the bread people, but they're actually a form of cake that is very special to the Brits.
And today's cake was?
Zucchini and orange, and I believe it was delicious.
That was absolutely delicious. I should have put a little of the lemon marmalade on that. Oh, yeah.
No, I would have been, absolutely.
Well, I guess I'll
give you a bit to go with.
Yeah, okay. That's great. So, and about the out, in terms of the outside, I really hadn't had a chance to go outside. You have all kinds of trees, bushes, and what you have growing here.
We're quite lucky in that our land borders on to...
It's federally protected creek side at the rear of the parking area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as if we were holding land in the middle of a federal park. The reason for that is the creek here is spawning ground for steelhead salmon, and so it has federal endangered species protection. Our yard here is backed by nature, and we have wild turkeys in the background. We have red-tailed hawks nesting in the eucalyptus trees 100 yards across the creek. And you can walk straight out into the park across the road and see all the critters.
Wow, that's great. So you have your own little private zoo, sort of, if you want to kind of call it. Oh, that's
and we fascinating. Feed the hummingbirds quite diligently.
The hummingbirds come.
Yeah, I had noticed while I was eating breakfast. Oh, the hummingbird!
Yeah, the hummingbirds like these fuchsias, and we have a feeder at the back as well.
That's great. That's fabulous. Well, did I miss anything about the inn?
I don't think so. And we hope we gave you a warm welcome.
Oh, you certainly did.
I guess a warm welcome.
Oh, yes, I think I know some people that we met at breakfast that apparently are having a great time. So,
yeah.
You have a website. Do you have a website?
Oh, yes. It's fairly mandatory now, I think, for the bed and breakfast industry to have your own website. And we put quite a lot of work into spreading our presence on the Internet, because most of our guests find us one way or another through the website.
Mm-hmm.
And is it like www.melitainn?
Melita Station.
MelitaStationInn.com.
Yes.
Okay.
So they can go and they can find us, or they can find us through their mobile phone, Google Places, all those handy tools that are available.
Okay.
They can find us that way. And of course, our location is absolutely ideal for this part of wine country, because you can head everywhere within 45 minutes. You can head anywhere in the Napa Valley, you can be on the Pacific Coast, or you can be up in north or south of Sonoma County. So it really is an ideal location to base yourself for several days.
Right. I appreciate it.
And we're the only bed and breakfast that is up and running and operating in San Diego.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's important to know.
Well, that's important. The rest are hotels and big scale.
Yeah, they have larger hotels like Hyatt and Courtyard by Marriott and Hilton and some of those.
But there's nothing like a good B&B.
It has a very different
flavor,
ambiance.
Yeah, certainly does.
And we believe in running the place personally.
Hands-on.
It's very hands-on. So, yes, Jackie is cooking the breakfast. I'm typically serving the breakfast.
And you're the administrator.
After all the back office matters. So we take care of it all.
Great. Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for a great time.
Good.
Okay.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Now, I have to, the ironic thing about this was when I went to my room, I saw the clawfoot tub, and I thought, I hate trying to get into the tub. I'm just having some problem with the... getting old with the hip, and I say, so the guy says, okay, let me give you this other room. And the room had a walk-in shower, which I thought was great until I was ready to go to sleep. And the bed, I would have liked to have had a ladder or a step stool to get up to the bed. I didn't realize how high the bed was, but I managed to hike up there and get my ass on there and kind of wiggle it around and get in there. But as for the inn itself, they're a great place to stay. And before I tell you about my incident regarding the Dixon market, I have a, this is how I got there.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Yeah, and that legroom was really good going cross-country. I kind of needed it. All right, so I wanted to tell you what happened at this Dixon Market. Well, we were, when I say we, by the way, I was with Nancy and Barb, and that's Barbara, as in Barbara Coletta from Women's Football Talk. And so anyway, we were on our way. I guess we were going to Davis. We were on the way to Davis, I believe. God, I'm not sure from, day to day. Anyway, so I saw this place called the Dixon Fruit Market, and right outside it said cherries, 99 cents a pound. And I said, oh, come on, let's kind of stop in there. And so in there was kind of, Well, it's not as much as a fruit market, meaning, I mean, at least I didn't really notice as much of, like, the fresh fruit as things that were prepackaged. So, in other words, it was like they had nuts and things like that, all kinds of things. And when I say prepackaged, it looked as if, and I did ask, that they were getting things in bulk and then they were packaging it, including. Now, the cherries were packaged, like, in 3 pounds. And when I went up to one guy, he said to me that, you know, they were pretty much ready out of season or going out of season. I don't know. There was a complaint about the problem with the weather or whatever, and these were like the end of it, you know. But I didn't want to get them because I figured, because I was going to be going later to some farms. And as it did turn out, I mean, I was able to go to one farm, like pick your own, and there was, you know, an abundance of cherries to pick. So, but the problem in doing that when you get, like, you know, 3 pounds of cherries at 99 cents, fine, you don't get to see all the cherries and what shape they're in and, you know, and stuff like that. You have to kind of take it for granted. Okay. So, but I wanted to get pistachios because pistachios are grown in California, or at least, you know, I'm making an assumption that when they say everything is locally grown, that it is locally grown, at least meaning in California. And I didn't have any of the pistachios until I got home. Oh, and by the way, I did go up to the guy at the cash register, and I understood that was the owner, and I did tell him, you know, that I was a travel writer, and I had commented that because I was interested in writing about the place itself. I'm lucky if I even got a smile out of him, but I didn't really care. I just wanted, you know, to buy these things. But anyway, so I get home, and at some point, I decide to eat some pistachios. And I'm finding a lot of pistachios are brown. I don't like, you know, when they're brown, there's no excuse, like, in terms of being roasted or whatever. But they were brown. Once they're brown, they just don't taste as good. And so I decided to make a phone call. Okay, so first I get this woman, and this woman. Now I'm going to comment about the ethnicity only because it'll be conflicting as I go into this story. That the guy at the counter appeared to be of Indian descent, meaning Eastern Indian? Yeah, Eastern Indian descent. Okay, because that's the accent that I got. So I called and I got this woman on the phone who also had a similar accent, and I got, she said something, it was his wife. And I just like, and I was telling her that I was dissatisfied about it. And then she's just commenting, got it from the roasters, it's not their fault. And I'm going, of course it's not their fault. I said, but you're the guys that sold it to me. Now, what I was looking for, actually, simply for them, just like as a, you know, consumer, customer anywhere, just, you know, been just nice to say, you know, I'm really sorry. Can we send you a replacement? I mean, they do a mail order. And it, rather than do that, she just kind of, you know, really just didn't care at all. And I said, well, you know, I told her I am writing an article, and this is, you know, what I would be writing. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to speak to the guy, the owner there. And she said, you know, to call back or whatever. At some point I did call back. She gets on the phone again, and she doesn't seem to care. And I said, you know, the heck with it. Well, okay, today he calls me on the phone. And he is, I mean, I could not even get in the conversation to explain what my upset was, because he was, all I kept hearing was fuck you, and shit. And because you're a writer, you're trying to take advantage. I mean, I couldn't even get in what the problem was. Nor did he care, but I mean, how rude can you possibly get? you know. And so I, when I got off the phone with him, I was trying to inquire, you know, about the place itself. You know, I couldn't find them listed in the Better Business Bureau. I tried all kinds of stuff. I did get the only thing I was able to get some information through, I guess it was Dixon, not tourism, but I guess they're whatever their local government thing. And I said, well, who's the guy who, like, that owns the place? And they gave me a name, Hanson Shikhani, Shyknai. And I thought, well, I don't know if that was the guy that I spoke to, but when I try to get some information about that, it comes up about that this guy is part of something else, CD Market, something, whatever. And I can't get a phone number for the CD Market, and I'm calling that area, and they don't even have it listed, and, you know, in terms of the county or anybody. I mean, this is really getting, you know, just a little nutsy, you know. And so I call another thing. I call Solana County, and it wasn't the tourism office, so I called them also. And I had asked them, you know, a couple of questions, and apparently they connected me to the Dixon Fruit Market. Now, the person I get on the phone appeared to be this young guy that I remember being there who I was asking some questions. Well, he's denying everything. He's telling me, oh, I must have the wrong place. It's a different place. There's nobody of Indian descent working there. It's owned by an Italian family for three generations. And he's, like, telling me all this stuff that's, like, obviously I don't get that's true at all, because I think, like, you know, kind of saying, well, tell her this and let her believe something else there. Now, needless to say, I am going to find out. I am going to, like, check this out to see what the story is, because I did write up the article anyway, you know, buyer beware, because my concern is also, you know, you're going to these places and you're taking things for granted, and, I kind of wonder, well, you know, if it's not with the Better Business Bureau and things like that, how do you know what you're really getting? I mean, like, maybe I don't want the pistachios from Turkey or whatever, that I wanted them, you know, like from California, or how do we know the pistachios don't come out of this, like, huge bag from someplace else and they repackage them, because everything is kind of repackaged. I mean, you know, I could be a little, well, I don't want to say evil, but, you know, I could just, like, right now, let's say I got about 10 minutes. Let's see. You want to see possibly, like, what happens if I call? Let's see. I'm very curious. I'm going to plug this in, and just for the heck of it, I want to see if this guy, okay, I'm looking on the phone number 707, let's see, okay, 678, I want to see what he decides to say here. Okay, okay. And I'm going to dial now. Let's see what goes on here. I want to see who answers the phone.
Dixon Fruit Market, how can I help you?
Yes, hi. Is the owner there now by any chance?
This is him. How can I help you?
Huh?
This is him. How can I help you?
You're the owner?
Yeah, I'm the one who runs it.
Okay, so you're the person I spoke to this afternoon?
Yes, miss.
So I'm trying to understand, because I'm trying to get, you know, why I keep getting different people when I call. I don't understand. So now
you're the only person I've spoken to.
Okay, so, and you're telling me that there was nobody of Indian descent.
No one of Indian descent working here.
Okay, well,
and there is no one of Indian descent that's ever actually worked here.
Okay. I'm not sure then who I got on the phone that was cursing at me then.
I don't know either. That's what I was trying to figure out. I even called AT&T and asked them if they're doing telephone work over here. And they told me they were doing some yesterday, but none around here today.
Okay. And, you know, because I'm going to get in touch with the people, the friends that I was with, and ask them, because they were in the store.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they'll tell me, you know, who was by, I'll ask them about the people behind the counter as well. As a matter of fact, what I'm going to do, because I'm kind of leery about this whole thing, so I'm going to have, like, somebody, like, pop in there when nobody knows kind of thing and check
okay.
it out and have it checked out myself. Cause I think
well, there's
this is,
no
this
Indian
is,
people who work here, miss. I mean,
okay.
I'm trying to run a business and you keep calling here. And I'm not trying to be rude to you, miss. I'm not. I really not. I understand that you're upset about that. But it's very difficult for me to run my business with you constantly harassing me.
Well, it's not harassing. When somebody is cursing at me,
I understand,
you know, then I'm trying to find out who it is that's been cursing at me. That's all.
I know, and I'm telling you right now, I'm the acting manager, and I have no idea who you called or who you spoke to. There's no one who works at my business who talked to you that way. And if there was, I would fire them on the spot, okay?
Okay. I'll have this. I'll ask somebody to pop in there and maybe check this whole thing out for me.
All right, no problem. You can
anyway.
Have them come talk to me.
Okay. What's your name?
I want to talk to Elvin.
Elvin. Okay,
right.
Elvin.
Tell him to come talk
Thank
to
you.
Elvin.
Okay.
You have a wonderful day, miss. You take care, okay?
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Right, bye.
Okay. So, you know, I just, interesting. I know, it's like I didn't, unless they're in two different places we're talking about, but I will have this checked out. Of course I'm going to call them when somebody, you know, screaming fuck you at me. anyway, all right, we're going to have a, that's music time again, another one of my favorites.
She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. She may be the beauty or the beast, maybe the famine or the feast, may turn each day into a heaven or a hell. My dreams, a smile reflected in a stream. She may not be what she may seem inside her shell. Souvenirs, where she goes, I've got to be
the meaning of my life is she.
And by the way, I guess was my congressman. Yeah, you get it. It's the crotch. The wiener crotch, yes. God, that whole thing. That whole thing was so absurd. I don't know. I don't know what people think that they can do or why they would do the things they do. I mean, so, now this is just, I'm going to say this is just my personal opinion. I don't know if this is true or not. I just think it's kind of, this whole thing is odder. Okay, now he marries this woman, he's Jewish, and he marries a Muslim. I think she's Islamic Muslim. Okay. And then he married her last year, and she was in a position of working for Hillary. I wonder if he married her, you know, to be advantageous in terms of his career, to have this person as his wife, as opposed to, you know, that I kind of find odd. And then, like, let me see, when he stopped her so she can get pregnant, which was, I said she was 3 months, she's like 3 months pregnant. So I'm trying to, when he shtukta, did he, you know, go on the internet and say, and kind of show, oh, here's the I'm wiener, and here's the wiener that I shtuk my wife with, and hopefully she'll be pregnant, so we'll have a little wiener. Oh, God, this whole thing is just, it's, got to be amused. You really have to with this. Bad enough, you know, having to have that name, but to do something with it, to ruin your whole career, I don't know. Oh, God, hopefully. Now, you can't do this with what would a woman kind of get away with? I mean, like, you know, does she, like, go... Do you think a woman in the business, in the politics or anything, is going to show her boob on the internet? I mean, you know, she can to show her boob on the internet. You can't see. This is so absurd. She could always get away with saying, oh, you saw my boob because I was about to feed my baby or something. But I don't think that's... That kind of stuff isn't, I can't imagine that would ever happen. And of course the question is with the other one, Schwarzenegger there. That would have been also interesting to of note in terms of that. Would he have stayed in office as the governor if it came out that he stooped his maid there and had a child? You know, I kind of wonder if it was kept secret just to keep him in office, or I don't know. You never know. It's all politics. So anyway, back here, and let's see. I'm waiting. Wait. Yes, I'm waiting to have. I guess I'm not sure who we'll call, Frank or Judy from the B. Bryan Preserve. But, all right, as we're waiting, I could always interrupt the song. That's what I could do. And what do I got here? I really need to put up some new, not new songs. I mean, I'm putting up songs that, you know, people are recording and I'm playing for them. But how about we do this? This one is the four. I was going to say the Four Seasons. The Midtown Men, who were the original four from Jersey Boys, and this is a song that they're singing now on tour.
Hello, this is Judy.
Hey, Judy, it's Merle Exit calling.
Oh, God. Yes, I forgot.
were you going to be doing the talking, or was it Frank?
Yes. No, I'll be doing the talking.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, guess what?
What?
You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
I have a thing with this radio show that I can call out, which is so great that I can dial out. And
uh-huh.
I usually don't do it unless somebody says, you know, can you call me? Or like in this kind of a situation where I'm going, wonder what happened to these people.
We had another little baby zebra today, so we were out late today.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, there's a lot of preggies there, I noticed.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
Oh, so you had one today, which means does Frank get to go out tomorrow, get a hold of it, and
well, no,
with
the zebra, we can't do that. We only do that with the antelope because the mama zebras won't let us near their babies.
Oh, okay. So that's all. That's
yeah.
The only time he gets to kiss him on the head. Those
exactly.
Animals.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get into the place. Well, first, what I want to get into, because I had the Safari West on yesterday, and I was
mm-hmm.
kind of explaining a bit that it's quite a different experience.
Right.
So, tell us what the place is about. What's the why do you have this here?
So B. Bryan Preserve in Point Arena is a limited preserve that only raises endangered and critically endangered zebra and then three different types of antelope. So we're different from a zoo because we don't have a lot of species of animals. We just have a few species that we hope we treat right. And the only other animal we're going to get are giraffe, which we hope to get in the spring of 2012. So we're just conserving and breeding just a select group of animals.
Okay, because they're endangered.
Yes. The two types of zebra we have, one is the grevy, and they are critically endangered. There was a study that just came out that there are only 700 of those left in the wild, about 1,800 left total in the world. So our focus is developing a diverse gene pool just in case something happens to the ones in the wild. The other type of zebra we have is the Hartman's Mountain Zebra. Not as critical as the grevy, but less than 4,000 left in the world. So those are the two types of zebra we've got. The antelope we have are not necessarily endangered.
Okay. First, let me ask you a question regarding the zebra. Or as mm-hmm. I say, a zebra is really the largest size bra you can find.
Okay. There you go.
But anyway, can you see the difference between the two species of the
Absolutely.
Zebra?
Absolutely. They are totally different. The grevy, which is the rarest one, is the tallest. They have little narrow stripes, especially on their rump. They have big Mickey Mouse ears, which are really funny looking, real fluffy looking. And then they have a mane that goes all the way down to their tail. Whereas the mountain zebra is a shorter zebra, real wide stripes on their rump, and they have this little stitching pattern that goes down their back to their tail. They also have what's called a dewlap under their neck, which is extra skin, and it's thought to be for attraction to the opposite sex, and it gets bigger as they get older. So I keep telling my husband that that's what mine is for. It's an attraction to the opposite sex.
That's a good one. Okay.
So, yes, now, when you see them side by yes. side, they are totally different.
Okay. Now, then the next thing you have, now, there are species. Would you say that there are species of antelope?
Yes, there are. Okay. These are in the antelope family, which means they keep their horns throughout their life. So there we have roan antelope, which are getting pretty close to being endangered, and sable antelope, and they're pretty much kissing cousins. They look similar, except the males in the sable category turn jet black, and their horns curve back like the letter C. And we just had four little baby sable that were born here. The oldest one, I guess, is probably a month old. So in addition to the sable and the roan, we also have kudu, which are really beautiful, shy antelope. The males have really majestic curled horns, and the females don't have any horns.
Okay. And I got to pet the sable.
You got to pet a little sable, which, you know, there are very few people in the world that get to pet a little newborn sable baby.
Yeah,
antelope.
I don't. Yes. That was like, yes. Oh, my God, I'm actually petting it.
Yes.
Got it on video, too. I had to videotape
it.
You know, but it was so cute to see Frank, like, after he tagged it and gave it its shot, and then he kisses it on the head, and he says, this is the only time, this is my only pleasure that I can get to kiss it on its head when it's 1 year old, and that's it. You know, he says, the only one I can do it with.
That's right.
So,
he's exactly right.
So now what I'm getting, by the way, is that, and it's being that it's a situation where, and I think, I believe this does, Frank do all of the feeding?
Frank does most of the feeding because I have a real job that helps pay the bills, and I'm usually gone. I'm usually gone during the week traveling for a job, uh-huh. and then he's here managing the farm, and I get to do all the feeding on the weekends. But we also have lodging available that helps support the ranch as well.
Sure.
We have
I want to get to the feeding first because
okay.
the fact that the that these animals, and they're wild animals, it's not, you know, are I guess they've been getting used to seeing a human being the person
Correct.
That's giving them the food.
Right.
You
we
know,
do
so
we do our tours. Yeah, we do our right. tours at feeding time, which is in the late afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
And that way the animals, you know, they get conditioned to know that, you know, when it's getting close to an hour or two before dark, then they know that we're going to come around and feed them. And that's when we have our tour so that guests can actually see them pretty close. And what
mm-hmm.
we like to do and think of ourselves more than a zoo is we really want to try to educate people. So while we're feeding the animals and they come up, it gives us a good opportunity to be able to talk about, you know, what the different species are like, you know, what their prognosis is in the wild, how they interact with others in their herd. And that's one of the things that we also pride ourselves in is that we have large fields that we keep the animals in, and it's more of a, you know, you hate to say natural because we know it's not natural, but it's more of a natural setting than what you would typically get in a zoo.
Right. And I noticed that the closest that he kind of gets, if you want to say the closest, is that he's actually walking into a barn and
mm-hmm.
calling to the animals, and they're coming over because they know that that's how they're getting fed. They come over to the barn.
Correct. But again, it's they're all wild animals. There aren't any that we can pet. There are none that are petted except for that little baby you got to pet.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and the only space that we went into where he said, okay, come on in, which because so I can explain to everybody that they're all sectioned off, and there's gates and fences.
Correct.
Yeah,
yeah, all of the animals are in different big pastures.
Right. Because we did go into, I'm guessing it was there were zebras, and they were kind of chasing each other, and he said, yeah, come on in. I mean, we walked
in. That was the mountain zebra.
Yeah, we didn't go too far. And there was a point he said, I think we better leave. They're getting a little wild. I think the mother was chasing the kid, because it was during the feeding, and the mother was chasing the kid and this kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
But that was the only time. And I also and the question I had, because I didn't get to do it. Now, Nancy went out and ventured out because I got that you're allowed to walk around all over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and just as that first gate, and said, just keep the gate closed. Now, I don't know whether to assume this or not, that the only animals that were could have come over to you, that which they didn't, would have been the baby zebra and her mother.
Right, they were just out temporarily just to get them away from the herd because the little baby
right.
zebra was so young.
Yeah.
So those zebra can be mean, and I'm sure you saw a lot of kicking going on. So we
yeah.
actually pulled the mother and the baby out so
mm-hmm.
that there was no danger to the little zebra. So, yeah, at that time, that you know, she could have gotten up close and personal with that zebra.
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
But,
typically,
so,
they're in their pastures, though.
So I guess the question I have, when you say, okay, you can go out there and, you know, and walk around, I'm getting you can't open up any gates or go into a barn. Am I correct?
Correct. Yes, you walk around and you stay on the road. We don't want you venturing into any of the pastures with the animals.
Okay, that's what I thought, because I thought to myself, I can't imagine, like, okay, sure, you can go into because you go into a barn, they can come over to the barn and have access to you. And hey, wait a minute, where's my feed? Oh, well, I'll take a bite out of you instead. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you know you could see them all from afar. What do
mm-hmm.
do? I guess some of them do. I forgot. I'll have to look on their photos. We were someplace. Oh yes, because they were being fed. They came close to the fence, so we were
mm-hmm.
able to see, some of the animals, as opposed to coming close to the fence versus going into a barn.
Correct. Yeah, some
and
of them do. We feed outside of a barn, so they do come close to the fence when it's feeding
okay.
time. Otherwise, they're just hanging out, enjoying hopefully some sunshine.
Yeah. Okay, and the only other animal which also you don't get to pet are the hens.
That is true. Yeah, the hens don't like to be petted either, but they do produce some tasty eggs.
Yes. That's another cool thing. Just walk into the hen house. They may be sitting around, and they'll, you know, just, you know, they're keeping their space. But when you walk in, I guess there's an area that you already set up that I guess we aren't going over and taking it out of its ass. you're letting them lay the eggs, and you're putting them in a bin, and we can pop in at the bin and take a couple of eggs. And because of the accommodations have kitchens, we can cook them up. So let's go into these wonderful accommodations that you have.
Yeah, so we have currently at Bee Bryan Preserve, we have a couple of cottages that are on our lake, and they were hand-built by Frank, and they are, we're trying to be green, but it's hard to be green. We're more chartreuse, but they are solar heat and hot water. The inside, the flooring, the pediments around the windows and the doors are all from reclaimed antique hardwood. The floors are all antique hardwood flooring. The windows are reclaimed stained glass windows, and the staircases are, you know, from the 1800s from the East Coast. And they also each have private hot tubs on the deck, so that's kind of a nice feature. We also have, for children or child friendly, we have a above our garage. So the carriage house is, all the places are two bedroom, and they all have small kitchens.
Okay. Yeah, that's where we stay, was the carriage house.
Correct.
Yeah. Which actually was, it was kind of interesting to see in terms of when you're with a family or whatever, that we did go over to look at the other units, and I thought to myself, oh, well, at least with the carriage house, the bathroom and the bedrooms are all on the same floor.
That is true. That is
so
true.
So you don't have to try to, you know, hold it in while you're running down the stairs.
In the cottage, you have an upstairs bedroom, and then downstairs you have a bedroom and the bathroom.
Right.
So, yeah, but it's not far. The stairs aren't that far.
They're absolutely gorgeous. They're absolutely gorgeous.
Well, thank you.
Yes, they really are. Not that I didn't like, I mean, the carriage house is just different.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't have the stained glass windows kind of thing, and it's in a different location. And I wouldn't necessarily say one is better than the other. They're just different in different, you know, locale. I guess especially if you, with more than just your family, a bigger group of people, you probably want to stay at the cottages.
The cottages, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, because having the hot tub and things like that, and especially, and how many people do you get people that come out there to get married?
Not yet. We have people that come spend their honeymoons here, but we haven't ventured into weddings yet.
Oh,
you know, when we can train a zebra to bring the flowers down the aisle or something, maybe we'll get into the wedding scene.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, the best, you can't, it's not like you can take a picture with the, you know, it's not like the zebra will come up to you and pose, help you pose.
Maybe
photo,
at feeding time.
Yeah, this is true. And you can't feed them. It's not like you can, you know, put out your hand and feed any of the animals.
Right.
Ain't that
right,
kind of
no.
thing either. but it'd be a cool place to really enjoy yourself, you know, honeymoon or just vacation. It's a different vacation, and it's quite different. I was commenting, it's quite a different experience than with Safari West. But even though you can kind of stay there, you're kind of like, it's more, and I have to say, more zoo-ish. So it's kind of like, as I was saying, it's kind of a cross between a safari park and a zoo with a variety of animals, and you still can't get to, you know, go up to them and feed them anyway. Not like you can do that either. except they're also told that, you know, giraffe can come over to you and, you know, mess up your hair and you still can't touch it. So so if you're looking to pet any animals, don't go to either place.
That's right.
unless a sable is born.
that's right. Unless you're the rare person that gets to pet a baby sable.
Yeah.
And not everybody gets to do that. We don't let just anybody do that.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was like, well, it's now on my list as second, because the first on my list is which is my insignia photo, is of me holding a 3-month-old lion cub in my arms. Never happened again.
Yeah.
That was in South Africa, and that was interesting. It was actually a lion farm that they had that I got, and I guess I wasn't totally clear whether these, like, they were getting lions that were, well, I don't think they were endangered. I guess maybe, let's say, a lion gets injured or something. I think that's what they were doing, because I said, and what do you do when you're old? I guess they, you know, give them good to a zoo or something like that. But so there was, like, I guess, an opportunity. And there was another place, I forgot, it was with another animal where that was happening as well. Otherwise, hey, you don't get to pet nothing. No. Not petting zoo. No way.
No, not a petting zoo.
But I have to comment that the eggs were, I mean, it's so good to have them.
Really,
like,
yellow yolks, right?
The yolks, oh, they're so delicious. It's like, I don't want to put anything on it. I don't want to mix it with anything, nothing. I just want to really delve into the taste of a fresh egg with the yolks, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, you can go wander out to, I wish you were there because I didn't know what the hell was growing in your garden.
Well, right now we have lettuce, we have carrots, we have artichokes, which, of course, is a classic California vegetable. We have asparagus, potatoes, onions, Napa cabbage.
Was there anything, I just curious, that I could have actually picked while I was there?
Yes, you could have gotten an artichoke. You could have gotten some beets, some asparagus. Frank wasn't a very good host with the garden.
Well, he didn't know what anything was. This is Judy's thing. He says, I don't know what these things are. I mean, I really wanted to taste something. And,
You'll have to come back.
I saw an artichoke, but I didn't get that it was, you know, I didn't know if it was, like, ripe yet. Again, somebody would have to tell me, you know, what does it look like, you know, like, when it is actually ripe, you know, I want to pick it and go. God, I just tried this artichoke that's not ripe, and ooh, never do that again. And wonder why? You know the. I wonder what it is. And maybe you could tell me. If you touch an artichoke, and you know like put your finger to your mouth, it's like awful.
I haven't noticed that.
Oh yeah, try that. I mean,
I'll do that.
If you hold an artichoke and then you, like, you know, touch a, you know, like, yeah. The taste is really bad, bitter or something. You go, ooh, kind of thing.
That's why you have to cook them first.
Yeah. I enjoy artichokes. I would have loved to have tasted some of the, you know, the food in the garden next time, huh?
Okay, next time, yes.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have one of my friends drive me out, way out to Long Island in Suffolk County, and go to the farms out there. Although that's the whole thing is one of the things I wanted to do in California was to get the food that's grown there, because they don't grow artichokes or avocados out on Long Island, you know. And that's what I was looking forward to. I'm going, and like, you know, nothing was happening. I guess maybe that's not the season. I don't know. Anyway, to get back to your place, I highly recommend. Now, but people can also come in and just for the tour, correct? They don't have to stay over or anything like that, right?
Yes, they can just come in for the tour. They just can call and make a or email us and make a reservation in advance. We're not open to the public per se, so you don't. Mm-hmm. We just can't have people dropping in. So we only do tours once a day, and that's in the late afternoon, depending on the time of the year. and they can just call us or email us, and we'll be glad to take them on a tour.
Okay, and I what I understood is that is really a Jeep that takes you around, not the truck.
True. If there's more than a couple of people, we go in the Land Rover, and
okay.
It's an open-air vehicle. But if it's just a couple of people, then you get to ride with Frank in the truck.
In the truck.
In the truck.
And that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. I really did. And your website is?
Our website is B, and then B-R-Y-A-N, Preserve. So that's bbryanpreserve.com.
Okay.
And you can also follow us on Facebook.
Okay. And I guess you want me to give the phone number?
Sure. Our phone number is 707-882-2297, and that's in California.
Okay. That's so fabulous. And it's near Point Arena, which we already spoke about on the show, about the lighthouse over there, too.
Yeah, great.
So that was pretty cool.
It's a cool little hippie town.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Judy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being there while I was calling.
I apologize for forgetting it.
It happens.
It's not every day you have a new baby zebra born.
That's true. That's true. All right. Well, have a great evening, and say hello to Frank for me. And
I will.
Eventually, you'll see all these great photos and the articles coming out.
Okay. Send me a link.
Okay. You got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yes. Highly recommend it. I guess you could do, I mean, both of those are kind of like separate experiences, you know, the preserve. But bye, everybody.